Today for our Friday Forum webinar, we welcome back UVA alum Larry Brayman. Larry comes to us today from California, where he is a Los Angeles-based career consultant and president of Global Career Consulting and Placement. Larry is a 1987 graduate of UVA, and before becoming a career consultant, he did a lot of theater work, both at UVA and after graduation as a professional actor and writer. Larry combines his theater and business backgrounds to help people around the country find and create more fulfilling, productive careers. A lot about the job search process has changed over the years, but a resume is still one of the key components of any job search. It's been a year and a half since we last had a webinar on resumes, so we thought it was time to visit the subject again, and Larry offered to present an update on his targeted resume strategy. Everyone needs a well-crafted resume, whether you are actively searching for a job or just thinking about a career change, and today you will find out how to make your resume stand out. Here is Larry Brayman with Key Strategy, Targeted Resumes.
Hi, good morning, everybody, and thank you, Marianne, for that introduction. And welcome, wherever you are in the country. I'm here in Los Angeles, but we finally got a little bit of rain, and I know that there's some cold and icy weather around the country, so I'm wishing you the best from out here. But I want to, again, welcome you to our presentation on targeted resumes. I'm Larry Brayman. I am, as Marianne said, I'm president of Global Career Consulting and Placement here in Los Angeles. And there's my contact information down at the bottom. I'll be sharing that again at the end of the webinar, but in case you don't make it to the end and you want to hang on to that, there you go. And if you do make it to the end, we have a special offer for you as well. And I am really pleased to be with you for, I believe, my sixth webinar for the Alumni Association. So thank you for having me back. It's a real honor to serve the university that has meant so much to me over my lifetime. So thank you again for having me. We'll have about 50 minutes or so of content. We're going to be moving pretty quickly. Take lots of notes. If you don't catch something, you'll be able to access the recording afterwards. We'll have a lot of exercises along the way. I hope you have your own resume out so that you can catch things and cite things that you'll want to improve along the way. So here I am now in Los Angeles. Back in 1984, I was a resident at the now defunct and demolished Tuttle Dorm. And that indeed is my suite mate. Some of you may recognize from back in the day, Olden Polonies, who was a center on our basketball team, who helped lead UVA to its most recent appearance in the Final Four back in 84. So it's been a while, and I think we're overdue. And many people, when they see this photo, ask if I still have these shorts. And no, I left them back in the 80s where they belong. So, but enough about that. We're going to move right into our content today. I would like to find out actually a little bit about you first and just find out where everyone who is listening is coming from. So if you could type over here, select A, B, C, D, E in the quiz area. You see on the left side underneath my name there is a poll that you can take. So we're getting some numbers. And are you in transition? Are you currently employed? Looking for career change, looking for your first job soon, none of the above. Let's see how we're doing. All right, we're posting those. So we're about evenly divided between in transition and thinking about a change. Very good. Well, no matter where you're coming from in this search or in this process, you're going to get a lot out of today's workshop together. So thank you all. We're going to move on from there. I appreciate all your responses. You'll have more interactivity coming up. I like to frame our webinars often with what it's not about so that you know what we are heading toward. We're not doing a lot of resume basics like what color paper you should use or the correct fonts or even how many pages we should stick to. If you have questions about that, ask at the end. But we're really going to be cruising right into substance, into strategy to take your resume to the next level. So that by ensuring that each line works to sell you in the direction you want to go next. Your resume is not your biography, as you've probably often heard. It's a sales tool. And we want to make sure that every line is working for you. And the techniques that we'll cover today will help you do that, will help you promote yourself in the tightest of competitions. So let's take a look. A little background first. What's a resume's number one job? Well, I think it's to get you in the door, to get you the interview. I think we could all agree on that. But how good does your resume have to be these days? Well, a little statistic for you. Before the recession, what percentage of online resume submissions do you think led to an interview? As a matter of fact, you want to type in the chat box. What do you think? Before the recession, what percentage of online resume submissions do you think led to an interview? If you want to type in the chat box down in the corner, you can.
Well, there are lots of guesses. Do you see the responses coming into the chat box? Are you on the run panel?
Let's see. No, I do not.
Try scrolling.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you know, I should scroll all the way down. Oh, okay. Ah, thanks, everybody. You're 20, 50. Right. So now I can catch up with you all. Actually, the study said about 3%, and that was when economic times were a little more, quote, normal than they have been since 2008. So what do you think the percentage is today with the ability of the Internet to allow people to submit hundreds or thousands of resumes for position? It might be less than 1%. So now, here's a bonus question. Is submitting your resume online enough when the job is important to you? No, we need to have a good networking strategy along with it, but we do want to make our resumes as powerful as possible. So they've got to be really, really good. And for those of you who are going, oh, now I know why I'm not getting interviews every time I send my resume in, or even most of the time, it almost never happens. It's really, really hard. And if you are getting interviews off of just submitting coldly online, then congratulations. You're doing really well, and your resume is doing well. It's hard to do. We can get you in the door by doing what your competition is not doing, and this is what I call targeting. Targeting is an acronym. We're going to break it down for you here, and then we're going to go piece by piece into each one of these sections so that you have a really good sense as to what it is, and you can apply this to your own resume. So our acronym for target, the T, we want to focus the resume on the role and each job opportunity. A, we want to have agreement and write for the level of the position within the organization that we're going for, the hierarchy, so to speak. R, we want to keep it relevant. We want to be really selective with what we're putting on there. G, we want to show that we're a go-to person with accomplishments, with specific differences that we've made to organizations and clients. Engage, for E, we want to create and hold our readers' interest, and T, finally, we want to test and evaluate our resume to make sure it's doing what we think it's supposed to be doing. Again, we're going to dig deeply into each one of those areas. So let's get rolling. Let's jump right into the T. Targeting your resume. We want to make sure that we make it clear and obvious to the reader why we're a great fit for the job. Right? It's not the job of the reader to figure out why we're a great fit. We have to really hit them over the head with this right from the start. How much time is a typical resume reader taking to look at your resume? Some studies say that it takes about 6 seconds for someone to decide whether or not they want to see you for the interview. They can weed you out, rule you out in about 6 seconds. That's about average. They'll take another 10, 15 seconds to decide, are they going to give you an interview? But they will take you out right away. In addition, we know that there are applicant filter services and software that the large companies apply to that also are going through and weeding you out. So you have to make sure that you are really focused on each role. We're going to talk about that a little bit more. But we don't want to make people on the other end work. They won't do the work. They'll go on to the next screen. So what are some ways that we can do that? Number one, we've got to customize each resume for the specific job that we're going for the specific opportunity. Hopefully that doesn't mean rewriting your resume every time that you have a submission from top to bottom, because it should be very targeted and already very focused on the types of roles that you want. But specifically for the job opening, you want to make sure that you're having keywords from that job description in your introduction, your accomplishments, etc. should all be focused on that specific role. The competition is just too fierce to go with generalities and generics. So especially with the software that's out there to filter you out, you've got to make sure that the key terms are in there. And here's something that I really ask you to think about now as well. Think above the fold. That's an old newspaper term, right? When you get the newspapers, and for those of you who still do, I congratulate you. I love them. I still get mine. But they're folded, and the most important stuff that the paper wants you to make sure you get so that you're enticed to go to the rest of the paper is above that top fold. The same thing should be true in your resume. You've got to hit people, again, over the head right off the top with why you are great for this job. And also think about this, because most resumes are looked at on screens these days. So how much of your resume will they actually see when it pops up on the reader's screen? It might be the first half, the first two-thirds. You've got to have the most important information right at the top, and we're going to take a look at how to do that. So one way to help with your targeting is to have a very targeted summary. It's that introduction, that first glance of you that really sets the tone right at the top of your resume. And so here are some recommendations for creating a targeted summary. Instead of the word summary at the top, or professional summary at the top of your resume, as many people do, try putting the actual title of the job that you're going for. Or how you see yourself as a professional. I'm a senior level accountant, director of operations, etc. That again sets the tone for the reader right off the bat. What image are you trying to create? Are you trying to project? The second thing that often gets left out of summaries, out of introductions, is what will people get by hiring you? What are they going to get? What kind of value are they going to get when you step into their organizations? So it's good. You need to put your expertise and years of expertise and industries and strengths, etc. But make sure there's a statement in there that says that I'm the person who comes in and solves these kind of problems, and here's the difference that I make when I will step into your organization. Try that right off the bat. Tell them. Make it obvious again. And so other suggestions here as well to make sure that are in your summary. We'll take a look at this at an example in a second. And this is what I call a best sellers list. I'll show you this as we flip over to this next screen. So here's an example, targeted summary. Right? So right off the bat, this person is telling you, I'm a web developer and graphic designer. And what have they done here? They're highly creative, deadline driven, with these years of experience, and here's what they do. They implement digital marketing strategies that drive sales and web interaction. That's the value that they're going to bring when they step into your organization. Let people know that. Here's some other important attributes that communicate artistic concepts, etc. And here's that best sellers list. Are you using a set of bullet points, something that's really easy on the eye so that people can quickly get what you're all about, what you bring? When people look at resumes, they scan from top to bottom, and they often skip over big chunks of prose. That's why we want to keep any paragraphs really down to a minimum, especially as we get lower down in your resume. But they will stop really briefly at these bullet points that can quickly sum up what you need to make sure that they've got in their heads about you, and also pointing out some things that you have that your competition may not be bringing, like perhaps that you're bilingual. So think about that, and I'm going to turn it over to you now. So for this exercise, to think about a position that you're targeting, and to ask, what are your best sellers? What must they know about you right off the bat? If someone just had a few seconds to quickly get your expertise and what differentiates you, what will it be? Let me give you a minute to write that down for yourself so that you can use this on your own resume. And if you wanted to type some things in the chat box as well so we can see the kind of expertise that we have out there, feel free to do so. Intelligent, good. Brandon, intelligent, I would say even more specific. What kind of intelligence do you have that not everyone else has? Medical experience, good. What else do we have? Now, relationships, math, chemistry, good. There you go, Brendan. That's it. Good. Specific software administration, nonprofit, financial analysis. Yes. And good, Jimmy. Salesforce, absolutely. Social media is one that will stand out. Conversation about four languages, right? What are those languages? Life cycle content. You've got it, guys. Exactly. So we want to bullet these so people get them really, really quickly. Terrific. Thank you so much for sharing in that chat box. I'm going to move on here. You guys are doing great. So here's another tip for above the fold. Let's pretend now that we've moved down the resume a little bit and we're beneath the best sellers list that are right here. Something that can be extremely helpful is what I call a career highlights section. Just a few bullet points of if you needed to let them know some of the most important things that you've accomplished during your career that are really going to excite them about the particular job that you're talking about, what would those three, four bullet points be that you would pull from the body of your resume if you want to make sure they're going to see them? Again, this is the above the fold. This would all be appearing above in the top half or two-thirds of your resume. So here are some important bullets that this person, that our web designer, pulled out because they wanted to make sure that they knew, that the reader knew these accomplishments and didn't want to hope and count on that they were going to pull them out from the body of the resume. So above the fold, targeted summary with career highlights to let them know right off the bat, hit them over the head with why you're a great fit for this position. So a targeted summary with bestsellers and career highlights will really help create the impression you want right off the bat. So try it. Just to sum up, I often think about the summary of your resume as your opening statement. And if you get that right, it's going to help you write the rest of your resume because basically it tells you what you need to support in the resume in terms of evidence. And the summary is our opening statement, and there's Clarence Darrow there. And you're telling them all the great things that you do, and you need to support it, you need to provide the proof in the rest of your resume, down in your professional experience, etc. So it's another way to think about your summary and approaching it in a targeted way. Some quick tips in targeting. Get feedback from your network, from industry insiders to see how you're doing with your resume. Is it focused the way you want to be? Make sure you're pulling out keywords from job descriptions and on job boards like Indeed.com. Reverse engineer your resume to make sure it's staying current and relevant with the terms you need to have. And avoid generic and tired language like great communicator. What kind of communication are you great at? That will differentiate you. All right? So let's move on. We've started with the T in target. We're going to move on to the A in agreement. This is about, and this is pretty sophisticated. It's not what a lot of your competition is doing, but it's going to help present and position you in ways that you need to be positioned. Writing for the level and position of the job. Where are you targeting in the chain of the corporate or organizational hierarchy? You need to make sure that you're writing about yourself in a tone that reflects the goals that you're looking for in terms of leadership within an organization. So what are you going for? Here's a little quick exercise for us. Match the statement on the left with the position on the right, meaning this is something that somebody may have on their job, on their resumes as responsibilities or accomplishments. What level do you think matches the position? So let's play along here. Participated on a project team that produced magazine under budget by $26,000. What do we think that is? What level does that sound like to you? You can type in the chat box if you like. Somewhere between staff and manager, right. I think I'd agree with that too. How about leading teams in the development of a new style sheet? Where do you think that would fall in the hierarchy here? You led teams. You want to type that in the chat box as well? And you just scroll down here, and I try to keep it up with you. Director, manager, somewhere in the middle range. How about shortening the budgeting process? Where are we there, do you think? Manager, director, you're handling budgets, right, the level, exactly. Oversaw all operational functions? Yes, now we're looking at executive level. And conducting focus group with readers? I know I'm moving quickly. You guys are fast typists, so that you're doing great. Maybe staff level, maybe supervisor level. I agree, and I think you're getting the gist of this. Meaning, if we want to be taking on certain leadership roles, we need to make sure that we're writing about things that we have done that reflect that, that reflect the level that we are targeting. So please keep that in mind. If you're moving from staff up to management, talk about leadership, how you've led certain projects. Have you taken the lead on different projects? Or you even led, we're always leading from within teams, so we need to highlight those things and talk about ourselves in ways that reflect what we're going for, not just where we've been. So some good thoughts for you, I hope. We also want to match the tone of our resume to the jobs that we are targeting. So if we're, for example, approaching a marketing job, we would probably need to be more creative with our layout and the language of our resume. Finance, legal, etc., we know those are more formal industries and environments, and we want to match the tone as well. So just something else to think about when you are creating your sales brochures that are your resume. So there was a little bit on agreement. I hope that you will keep that in mind as we move to the R in target, which is staying relevant. We have to be great editors to make sure that we hold our readers' interest and keep our resume and our readers focused on our goals, which is that particular job that they have available. So we have to be great editors, and we also have to be creative sometimes about how we are presenting our material. We want to remember, again, that our resume is not our biography. So we want to edit or remove or downplay things that may throw our readers off the scent. And sometimes this is hard for us to see, and that's why we're a good partner or coach can come in, because we tend to love all of our material and all of our history, and someone, an outsider, maybe someone from the industry that you're in, or a good coach can help you say, you know what, this is not supporting where you're going anymore. It may have been important before, but may not be any longer. And we don't want to overload people and hide the details that are the most important. So here's another exercise for you. You ready? Which would you remove or downplay from this person's history? Which roles would you remove or downplay in order to stay relevant for this entry-level advertising or marketing position? We've got sales associate, lifeguard, art therapist, and auto detailer. We got lifeguard, votes for the lifeguard, votes for the auto detailer, one vote for the trombonist. Auto detailers, lifeguard auto detailers. Right, there seems to be a pretty good consensus there about the auto detailing and the trombonist and the lifeguard. Right, we want to stay creative. Now, we could make an argument for the trombonist, right, that shows creativity, that shows ability to interpret and be a creative participant. But I think you're getting it. We can be selective with what we put on our resume, and even with positions, especially as we're looking further and further back in our history, those of us who have been in the workforce for a while. There are creative ways to do that and present this information. We're not going to get into that in this workshop, but there are certainly ways that we can present and edit in this manner. So, but these are things for you to think about. Yes, we want to avoid showing a gap, and why don't we can talk about that toward the end of our conversation in the question section. That's a very good question. So, in the R stage, we want to be relevant and creative. So, we may need to rewrite job descriptions and accomplishments in terms of the position that we're going for. Again, the way we've thought about ourselves, and I'll show you an example of this in just a second, but the way we've always thought about ourselves may not be completely relevant if we're looking to make a change or go for a higher position within an organization. So we may have to take our old information and either rewrite it or pick different important aspects of what we've done in past roles and bring those forward while we allow others that are no longer relevant to fade to the background or come off the resume entirely. And so again, here's the tip. Include aspects of the job or the internship, et cetera, that are most relevant to the desired role. Right? We don't want to hide the great, most important, and attractive details in a lot of information that people have to wade through because they won't take the time, but B, we just don't want to cover up the most important aspects of our application. So here's an example of this. Let's say we have a job opening of safety coordinator, so in an office in a corporate setting. And this person's most recent title was office manager. And this is how she was used to writing about herself as an office manager. This is her old resume language. As an office manager, she oversaw budgeting, staff onboarding and scheduling, and building and equipment maintenance, and she ordered supplies. Okay, that's what an office manager might do. But let's say she is now going for the safety coordinator role. What she would want to do is rewrite her job description, her kind of everyday responsibilities, in terms of the role that she's targeting. So there's the old language, but here's the new language. These are things that she also did, but wasn't on her old resume, didn't think it was perhaps as important to landing that her next office manager job. And now she's going for a safety coordinator job, so she's going to talk about things like implementing and overseeing safety and emergency preparedness protocols and coordinating safety and Red Cross trainings. You see how we can take our same history, but pull different aspects of it to make it attractive to the people who are filtering us for the positions that we want to go for now. Make sure our language is relevant for where we are heading now and not selling us toward where we've been or directions we don't want to go anymore. Okay? So let's move on to the G in target. T-A-R-R was relevant. Let's go on to the G, which means you're the go-to person. You're the person who has accomplishments, who has taken care of business, who has solved problems in organizations or volunteer work or student activities where you have been in the past. And by demonstrating those specific accomplishments, you are setting yourself as a person who can take care of those problems, the same similar problems that they're having in their organization. So that's why people hire people, is to solve problems. So let's take a closer look at that. When we talk about accomplishments on a resume, this is what should take the most space in your professional experience section. When we look at our professional experience, we usually have a heading. It says, here's the place I worked, here's how long I worked there, and here's the title I had. And here's a line or two about what I did on a daily basis, the problems I solved. But the real meat of it, that what's going to really interest your reader, are specific problems, specific accomplishments that you had and problems that you solved along the way that really made a difference to that organization and are different from anything that anybody else who's applying to that job could possibly say. So we want to think about specific instances where we have made a difference and made things better in the lives of our internal clients, our external customers, our departments, our organization's bottom line, and get them on our resume in those bulleted accomplishment statements, we call them. And we break them down into two parts, and I'll give you some examples here. It's basically into two parts of what did you do and what difference did it make? Or we call this the action and the result. And we want to make them really pretty sparse and get right to the point. And I'll show you some tips about this later, but we save the how and all the background information on how you pulled off this wonderful thing for the interview. We just want to get them enticed enough to say, hey, let's learn more about this person. So here are some accomplishment statements: eliminating redundancies, saving over $80,000 a year, redesigning student websites, increasing reservation rate by 35%. Statistics are great. Right? Stats, dollars, percentages, we don't always have them. So sometimes we have what we call, instead of a hard result with numbers, we have what we call a soft result, which is something like boosting morale and reducing union grievances, for example. We don't have an exact number for that, but this is still a result. So often when I'm looking at a client's resume, and we're going through point by point by point, the most important question I can ask them about the information they're providing, about what they accomplished in their jobs when they're listing these bullet points is, so what? What difference did that make? Please keep asking yourselves that same question. Am I telling my reader how this was good and how this made a difference to my organization? Keep pushing yourself to do that all throughout your resume. What difference did it make that you accomplished what, or that you did what you say you did? I'm going to break this down now for you. It's time for you to write an accomplishment statement. Okay? This will take a minute or so. But think of a job that you're aiming for. Okay? Visualize it. And now I'd like you to write one accomplishment statement that shows how you brought results in a key area for that role. Some expectation that they will have for you. See if you can write an accomplishment statement. And here's a reminder. What did you do? What was the result? And here's that example. But what did you do? I redesigned the student union website, or I revamped the applicant intake system. And what was the result? Simplifying user experience, increasing event registration rate. Aha, we have some coming in already. Prepared, delivered updates from every screen on reducing document count. I think that some of the, you guys are pulling this off your resume, so you're doing really well. Nice. Let's see, designed analysis technique, changed the way assessment was done in the industry. Good, raised 20 million, increased donors, raised 20 million for the organization. Identified inconsistencies and promoted county of line staff, right, non-performing product lines. Right, Carl, keep pushing to the results. So you divested non-performing product lines, and what kind of savings did that bring to the organization, right? Action, result. You guys are doing terrific. I'm going to take a sip of water. I'm going to let you keep writing, typing, so that you can have one terrific accomplishment statement for your resumes. And I imagine you'll have many, many, many more. Change financial reporting. President emphasized product lines on expenditure categories. Something to create incentive and maximize profits by 35%. I'm always so impressed by the level and the competency of people that are joining these webinars, and certainly a reflection on the university as well. Good. Thank you all for your contributions, and I hope that you are inspired to keep this up, because this is what is going to set your resume above and apart from your competition, because no one else can bring to a job and to a resume, to an application, the specific accomplishments that you have achieved yourselves. So good work, everybody. Here's some final thoughts about accomplishments and being the go-to person. Include recognition and awards, but if you wish, but make sure you say what they were for. Right? If you just put a president's award, that's not really telling the reader what you got that for, and it's not really selling you. We want to include things that sell you on every line. So if it was a president's award for streamlining operations, or for increasing morale, by coming up with programs that increase morale, etc., let's hear it, okay? Because sometimes you might get a president's award for showing up on time for work every day for a year. So let's be really specific. Make sure you're sequencing your accomplishments from most to least impressive. Remember, people are reading resumes, scanning them from the top down. So in each bundle of accomplishment statements under each job description, what do you want people to see first? Make sure they're ordered in levels of impressiveness. Avoid repetition of examples. If you've made your case that you're great at something, if you've made it once or maybe twice, you've made your point. And don't keep repeating it over and over again if you need other interesting aspects of your history to surface. So we don't want to obfuscate later accomplishments by covering up with too many of the same accomplishments. So let the later ones breathe, okay? and avoid the laundry list. Too many accomplishments. Remember, the eye tends to skip large chunks. So if you've got a job description and you've got 10 or 12 or so, how is the eye going to decide which ones they're going to go to? So see where you're repeating yourself again. Partner with a coach, with a mentor, with somebody from your industry, so that they can help you find out and point out what is the most important information to keep and what you might want to edit to make sure that you're not hiding really important information. Okay? Now we move from the G as the go-to person to engage the reader. We want to make sure we're holding their interest, so we turn our readers from this unfortunate reader to these people, to these kids who are loving the act of reading. We want to have excited readers on the other end. And all the tips that we've been talking about today will help excite your reader, and here are some other big picture ideas. So as I was talking about before, big chunks of prose, the eye tends to skip these things. So we want to make sure that we're really tightening our language so that the most important information comes through. So in the chat box or on a piece of paper, here's an exercise for you. Rewrite this accomplishment statement in order to make it more engaging. How would you tighten it up to just that action and result? What would you do? Do you want to type some suggestions in the chat box? Here we have build new document manager system, purchasing the software, improved ease of access, saving 75 hours of work, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What would you do? Feel free to type your answers in the chat. So add some bullets. Let build new document system, saving this much per year. Source, select, and build, saving this much per year. Good. Thank you. Let's see, what else? Led the purchase of the new system, resulting savings of 97,000. Exactly. Right. I think we're on it. Change purchase to update. Okay, nice. Through comprehensive change, led in building document system. Good. Yes, thank you everybody. I think you're right on track. I'll put up on the next slide an idea that I had for that as well, which I think is right in line with the thinking. Revised document saving management systems, saving over 97,000 per year. Right. We want to keep it nice and tight. And you see how we're much more likely to stop on this as opposed to something like this that is so much denser. Let's get right to the point and save the how for the interview. So some final tips on engaging that reader, keeping their interest. Remember, less is more. It's hard to let go of that wonderful history of yours, and we want to tell them everything, but they're not interested in everything. They're interested in what is relevant to them. So we want to keep it relevant and keep it tight. Avoid telling the whole story. Trust that if you get it down to just the most essentially important elements, you're going to make a strong impression more than just bogging them down with detail after detail after detail, and save the how for the interview, as we said before. So short phrases show greater energy, avoiding dull repeated language, and avoiding the chunks of prose that we've been talking about really throughout this presentation. So there are some tips for you in terms of engaging the reader. And now finally, moving to our last letter of target is the T, and that stands for test. We want to make sure that after we've done all of our work, that is at rising to the level that we need it to rise to, that we need our resume to rise to. So I call this a pre-flight checklist. What can you do to make sure that your resume is as strongly poised as possible for the positions that you are targeting? So one, make sure that your content is aligned with current job postings. Again, we should be aligning it with the particular opportunities that we're going for, as we mentioned at the beginning, by making sure that key language and terms are actually present in our resumes, to make sure that the document scanners are picking up on that. but we also want to make sure that we are using language that is current. We know that industry terms change over the years, and so you definitely want to, again, reverse engineer your resume to by taking a look at job postings, by getting feedback from industry mentors and your network, to make sure that you are staying current and using current terms and terminology. And give it the sniff test yourself. Do you find your own resume interesting? If I were the employer, would I interview me? A lot of times, just by asking that question, we can see where parts of our resume that are sort of sagging, that are not supportive, that we may have to make more relevant, etc. And you can go back to the target presentation to help you. And this is important: proofreading, spelling, punctuation, grammar, typos. There's so much competition out there that people may choose any reason at all to weed you out and make this decision process easier for them in terms of who they will bring in. And if you have errors in resume, that may be something that can weed you out. So again, be very, very careful. Have partners, coaches, mentors that you can go to for another eye, because we miss things when we are so closely wed to it that other people might see. So the final test: is my resume selling in the direction I want to go next? And hopefully throughout this presentation, you picked up some techniques in terms of how to go literally line by line throughout your resume to see if this is supporting you in the direction that you want to go. And if not, can you get rid of the information? Can you strengthen the information? Can you make it more relevant? So where have we been in our target presentation? We talked about focusing the resume overall, and especially at the very top on the positions that you're going for. We're writing for the level of the position. We want to make sure that the information is still relevant, and we're being creative to talk about our past in ways that are relevant for our future targets or our current targets. We're talking about how we've been the go-to person by emphasizing our accomplishments. We want to hold the reader's interest, and we want to make sure we're testing our resume before we turn it loose on the world. So that encompasses the body of our conversation. I'm going to turn it over to Mary Ann for a moment, and then we'll come back for your questions, and I'm happy to say we have 15, 20 minutes to discuss questions. So let me turn it over to Mary Ann.
Larry. I just want to let everyone know, and as we've mentioned, Larry is a career consultant, and I want to let you know that Larry offers the first 30 minutes of his career consulting services at no charge. He can meet with you face-to-face in Southern California. Otherwise, you can meet with him via Skype, phone, or email. And additionally, Larry is offering 10% off all services for UVA alumni and friends until February 21st if you mention this webinar. Thanks, Larry. And UVA alumni always receive a 5% discount. Larry has told me that he has connected with and helped UVA alumni from all over the country, which he considers a professional privilege. So now let's take a look at some of your questions.
Okay, thanks. And one question, actually, is will we be sending the slides? And we won't be sending the slides, but you will be able to access this recording 24/7 in perpetuity, I think. So you'll have
I'm going to go back to for targeting. Mark asks, how far back in time do you go for career highlights?
For career highlights. So in that top box, if we're talking about the same thing, Mark. In that above the fold section for career highlights, I think that you need to go back as far as you need to make as strong a point as you want to make. So I think you can go back as far as you want. Sometimes when we're making a career change, our most relevant career highlights are going to be pretty far back in our history, and we're going to need to pull from them. But overall, we want to keep it as current, as close to our current chronology, present time as we can, but I invite you to reach back as far as you need to make that strong point right off the top. So I don't think there's a hard and set rule. At least
another question.
Highlights.
How many highlights?
Is that
along the same line?
Mark, let us know if that answers the question. Okay.
How many highlights? That was another question.
I'm sorry.
So
say that again,
we're
Marianne?
Talking about that.
Yeah, for that top section, I would say anywhere from 3 to 5. There's no, and one of the wonderful and sometimes bedeviling things about job search is there are no absolute rules, and so you have to kind of feel out for your own your how your resume is looking. Also, how much history do you actually have? You may be pretty new in your career, and so you may have just 2 or 3 things that you want to pull out. For those of us who have more experience, there may be 5 or so. So you're going to have to weigh that individually.
Thanks, Larry. Regarding agreeing with the position, there are a couple of questions about what if you're taking a step down. So what if how do you make it agree if your title maybe indicates that you are at a step above what you're applying for?
That's a great question. We can't really change our actual titles in the job, the actual titles that we've had. That would be dishonest. We don't want to be dishonest, but we want to talk about ourselves in ways that sell ourselves to the next position that we're going for. So there are a couple things that you can do. One is, again, when you're choosing the accomplishments and we're choosing, just that there's usually a line or two of kind of basic job description that we put underneath that title. Again, write more toward, instead of the higher, say, executive level functions, more the hands-on aspects of your job that reflect kind of that they've done on a day-to-day basis as well. So you can write your job description a little bit differently. But also, and probably the most important part is right there in the summary at the top, is because that's the first impression that people are getting. So we don't have to put the word executive if we're going from an executive level to something that's more of a middle management level. We might call ourselves in the headline, right at the top of our resume, a manager, or a just a more generic, a such and such professional, and then make sure we're using language in the summary itself that is not all about leading multi operations and very high level things, and talk about the things that you want to be doing next that you're good at, so that are more at the level that you are targeting. So that you're making that first impression that this is what you're going for, instead of where you have been. That's on paper. The most important part is usually in the interview, where people are sometimes afraid that we're too experienced for this job, etc., or we're not going to be interested in this job, and we have to sell in a different way in the interview as well.
Thanks, Larry. I know you saw these questions come in. You mentioned it while we were talking about downplaying irrelevant positions, and we had some questions about running the risk of showing gaps in the job history if you're trying to downplay certain positions. How do you handle that?
Right. So we want to be careful not to create gaps in our last, say, 10 to 15 years of experience for those of us who have it. So there are several things at play here. People expect to see about 10 or 15 years of accounted for chronological experience on a resume. So anything before that, we can be very selective in terms of what we're putting on or leaving off. So after 10 or 15 years of experience, you can do something like put additional operational experience, additional editorial experience, whatever it happens to be, and then you can pick and choose whatever jobs you want from your past and leave the dates off. And you can order those however you want, you can leave out things, and so when you're looking back further in the past, that's a great way to leave things off without creating gaps. It's perfectly legitimate to go back to account for the time for about 10 or 15 years and then say previous or additional such and such experience, and then list, you get to choose, and then leave dates off. And you can really shorthand them and really condense them that way. in terms of experience that's more recent, like 10 or 15 years, the only way I would leave something off entirely would be if it's sort of an overlap in years. So let's say you had a job from 2009 to 2010. Then in 2010, you got a new job that didn't work out well or that was kind of off track, and you just kept that for that year, 2010. And then you picked up another job in 2010 or even 2011. If you take out that middle 2010 job, then it's still going to appear clean. And I hope without a diagram that you all are able to follow me on this. A resume is not a legal document. When you fill out an application at the job, you know, before an interview like we often have to do, that's more of a legal thing where you're saying, here's the complete and I'm signing, I'm validating this is true. But that's different. By the time you get the interview, you're way ahead of the game. And so if you're having to fill in some of those gaps, it's okay. On the resume, it's a sales document, it's a sales tool, and we don't have the same concerns. So everything that's on there should be honest, but we don't have to put everything on there. So I hope that was helpful.
Sounds very good. I'm going to ask you about laundry list problem, which I think you're kind of touching on, but several questions came in about that. What if you wore too many hats at a job, so it becomes a laundry list? What do you do if you change titles? Again, I guess that would fall in the category of having so many hats at a previous job. Someone suggested that you put them as two different jobs on your resume. So I don't know if you agree with that. How would you address that problem of the laundry list?
Yeah. Right. Just I've been in a place for a long time and it's all going to run together in one big chunk. Or I've just got too much information I want to share. So again, the first filter is relevant. If it's helping you get where you want to go next, you want to keep it on. If it's not, then I would apply a filter. Now, there's also a technique of breaking down, if you've been in an organization for a long time, of breaking down the laundry list by having sort of a subheading of the title and the years as you go along. So here you are at Disney, and you've been there since 1994 till it's a present. But your current job is director of animation, and that's from 2009 to present. And then you would list some bullet points. Then before that, you were manager of such and such from 2007 to 2009, and a couple bullet points, and so on, so that it's much easier on the eye. Sometimes we have a lot of job positions where we've kind of done pretty much the same thing from position to position to position within an organization, and that seems kind of repetitive if we list it and we put some bullets and we list it again and put some bullets. And in that case, I work with clients to just list all the job titles kind of right at the top with their years. That shows progression. And then you can be very selective about the bullet points that you include. So that's another way of approaching dealing with lots of information. And so I hope that was helpful to whoever posed that question.
Thank you, Larry. Speaking of that, we've got a lot of questions about basically about the format of the resume. I'm going to throw them all at you, and you can address sort of how the resume is supposed to look, about how long should the resume be, do career highlights follow target, where do you show previous jobs, where does education go? You get the idea. People are curious about the actual format.
Sure, and I'll tell you what, let me make this offer. If you email me, I'll send you my resume, which is a sample that you can use in terms of formatting, et cetera. So just email me and say, send me a copy of your resume. That would be, I'd be happy to do that. And in terms of formatting, actually, Marianne, could you list all those different questions one more time, because there was a lot there to think about.
Sure. Where do career highlights go? Where do you show previous jobs? Where does education go? And also, how long should it be? And then questions that there have been several questions about how long each section should be in particular, but also how long the presentation should be overall. Is it, do you ascribe to the 1 to 2 pages limit, hard and fast rule, or not?
Right. The one answer that I've been following an online discussion about this in LinkedIn, and I think someone had a great answer, which is the resume should be as long as it needs to be. And for most of us, that's 1 to 2 pages. And again, no hard and fast rules. And by the way, know your audience. Some industries expect that you can say what you need to say no matter how long you've been out there in one page. And if that's the trend in your industry and the expectation, then go with it. Most industries are more forgiving. They're saying 1 to 2 pages. And by the way, it's mostly electronic now anyway. So pages are not quite as relevant. And I think in the next number of years, most resumes are going to go away, and it's just going to be our LinkedIn profile that's going to be our resume. Be that as it may. If we're in our first, say, 5 or so years out of school, one page ought to be sufficient. If we're looking beyond 5 to 10 years, then I think we're going into 2 pages. Some executives that I work with are going into 3 pages, but really most are able to stick with 2 pages. If you have a list of things like publications, published articles, a huge list of technical skills, a huge list of particular projects that you think that your audience is going to need to know about, you can put a third page on. I would call that an addendum, like a published article's addendum. You can put a note within the body of your resume saying, you know, see addendum for published articles, or I have one that's for workshops that I have developed and delivered, for example. So that may be helpful on the length part. As far as education, unless you are right out of school with very little professional education, I like to see education toward the bottom of your resume after your professional experience, then list your degree. Remember that people, that hiring managers are looking to hire professionals, not students. So we need to frame ourselves in that manner. So we will often push that, usually push that down to after the professional experience section of your resume. For those career highlights, and again, that's an option. Not everybody uses them, but I had those, and we can go back to that slide perhaps. Those I put in right after the bullet points of your bestsellers. They're part of your summary, and right before you get into your professional experience. And let me see if I can show you what we did here. So there's the summary, and then we're just moving down the page a little bit. We've got a few career highlights there as well. Let's see, Mary Ann, did I miss anything?
I don't think so. So far, I'm still going to get to some more questions. These are the ones that came in during the webinar. And actually, now is a good time. I want to let everyone know we are coming up on 1 o'clock, but Larry has agreed to stay on for a few more minutes. I'm going to get to my slide about the next webinar. Larry will stay on, but I'm going to let you know that our next Friday forum will take place in 2 weeks on February 21st. When Karen Dowd will present the key strategy of a city-specific job search. So I hope you'll join us then. And I want to just interject a big thank you to Larry for another helpful webinar, and I hope you all are feeling ready to update your resumes. So we will return to Larry in a moment, but I just want to thank everyone who has to leave us for joining us today. We appreciate you spending your time with us. As always, we have been recording today's webinar, and everyone who registered will receive a link to the webinar recording in an email later today. Also, please remember to complete the Friday Forum survey. So now let's get back to some more questions with Larry.
Good. And by the way, you're welcome, everybody. Thank you for your kind notes. And just a quick note, if you're not from a UVA alumnus and you think that a presentation like this could be helpful for your own alumni association, let me know, let them know, connect us, and I'd be happy to deliver a similar service for your own alumni association.
All right, I'm going to jump in, Larry, with a question about cover letters. I know this always comes up. Do employers look at the resume or the cover letter first? And can't the cover letter address things that your resume cannot?
No, please never trust in your cover letter addressing things that your resume doesn't. Cover letters, if they are requested, should absolutely be provided, and you should spend a good amount of time on them, customizing them to the job that you're going for. That said, the majority of people skip over cover letters and go to the resume. Remember that if they're spending 15, 20 seconds, a minute or so on your submission, they're really going to want to go straight to the core, which is your resume. So please don't count on your cover letter highlighting information that is not in the resume. We do want to write a well-written cover letter that does highlight relevant information that matches you up very, very well with the job at hand. But we don't want to substitute that for having that information in the resume. And if you're thinking about, well, I'll put something in the cover letter that they ought to know, and maybe it's not in the resume, but I'll put it in the cover letter, that should give you a clue as to what should be right at the top of the resume that you are submitting, right in that summary section. So cover letters can be important, especially if you're going for things like a job that just has a lot of written communications in it, et cetera. But the resume is really the core of that submission. So I hope that's helpful.
Well, along those same lines, perhaps another question has come in about applications. Dana has says that too many jobs require the online application, which does allow a place to download the resume and cover letters. However, in her experience, the employer does not seem to look at anything but the application. So how can, and the application might be limited by only allowing short answers or, you know, very limited. And so how do you make your online application stand out so the employer might, I guess, move on to your resume or see the real you, she says?
Right. Okay. Let me think about that. And by the way, I appreciate there was some chat going on the side that says sort of generic fluffy cover letters that are just focused on your aspirations and your feelings, et cetera, have turned off a recruiter that was in the chat box, and that was really that was right on. This whole process is not about you. It's about them. It's about your potential employer or the recruiter who is filtering you. So we want to keep our cover letters and our resumes and our online applications, whatever questions that we're having to answer, absolutely focused on what we can do for them. So in terms of answering online questions, I would just say be very, very thoughtful and think always in terms of their point of view. What are their business needs? What do you have specifically from your background that you can pull forward that will prove that you can take care of the problems that you know that they've got based on the job description that they're putting forward? So that plus an extremely targeted resume, I think will be your best friend out there.
Okay, here's a more specific question. Should you include a job that's less than 6 months in duration? Is there some rule on that?
If it helps yourself, it's always about if it helps position you in a stronger light toward the job that you're going for. You may have picked up some extremely important experience or hopefully a key accomplishment that no matter how short that job was, is going to help position you in a better light for the job or jobs that you're going for. So that's where you have to be your own filter. I don't have a hard and fast rule about that. And by the way, one thing that I do make sure that my clients leave off on their resumes is months. If you have a job for 6 months in 2011, you could put that you were there from January to June, or you could just put 2011, and that is honest, and it expands the space of that job and the space in your resume that you may need to expand. So I would think about that as well.
Okay, I have a couple more that I will throw at you, Larry. There have been several involving gaps in the resume. We talked about gaps based on picking and choosing which positions you include, but people are asking what about, some people have termed them real life gaps about, say, taking time off to care for your children or to care for elderly parents, actual large gaps of time when you were not employed. So you're not picking and choosing, but you're trying to address those.
Right. Right. Each case is different, and everyone's going to have a different story to tell. And I would keep in mind a couple different things. One is that if there's a significant gap, that I think that you need to account for it, and that putting something about the situation, I think is completely legitimate. But you want to be tactful. You don't want to give them information that may indicate that this gap may occur again really soon. I have another elderly parent coming up that I'm going to have to leave the workforce for or something. It's tough, but this is where you've got to be very careful. And again, and working with, you know, with a coach or other people who've been through this experience might be good, but I would account for it in some way. Took time to be a stay at home parent, but also please remember that for most of us during those gaps, for a lot of us, we weren't only just taking care of just raising a kid or taking care of a sick parent or perhaps we were doing things that were helping with our own professional development, and those should be mentioned, like going to school, taking some courses, doing some particular volunteer work, having an internship, doing some project work for friends, even if we weren't paid for it. It can still come under professional experience, and that can do a lot to fill a gap. For my clients, I'm not so concerned whether or not they were paid for what goes on their resume so much as it is relevant professional grade experience. So even if you wanted to call yourself an independent consultant or an independent contractor during that time, if you actually did some professional work during that time, even if it was volunteer, helping people, helping friends in their business, that is relevant. So again, it's really case by case, but I hope that gives people some ideas.
Okay, and I'm going to throw out, I think will be our last one is, should your LinkedIn profile be the same as your resume? How do you suggest relating those two?
Yeah, I'm a pretty firm believer in that they should be very, very similar, especially if we're in job search mode. If we're in job search mode, you should consider your LinkedIn profile to be your resume, because people will, first of all, as soon as they even hear about your submission, they're going to Google you, they'll go to LinkedIn, they'll check you out. But also, when we're out there networking and talking to people, we can't carry around our resume everywhere we go, but we can give people our LinkedIn URL so that they can have a really quick access to who we are as a professional, and that ought to be on our business cards, for example. So there's one difference in LinkedIn that some people ascribe to, and if you guys check me out on LinkedIn, you'll see this. The way I set up my summary, and the way a lot of people do, is a little bit. It's more narrative. It's more first person than what we get, the colder, drier resume ease that we get in a summary most of the times on a resume. So you can tell LinkedIn allows you to tell a little bit more of a story, and again, for example, that just again check me out on LinkedIn. You'll see what I'm talking about. It's a style. It can be pretty effective, but it's really a personal choice. But if you're in job search mode, make sure LinkedIn is reflecting who you are as a professional in a way that your resume would as well. That's my advice.
Well, thank you so much, Larry, for staying after for questions, and thank you everyone who joined us. Thank you, everyone, from Alumni Career Services here at UVA's Alumni Association. Remember, you can email Larry for a sample resume, and please join us again in 2 weeks for our next Friday forum, and have a great weekend.
Thanks, everybody.